You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
It's been almost 10 years since I've started this podcast. And first off, I'm going to recommend that everybody start a podcast, or at least have the philosophy I did when I started this, which is I didn't want anyone else to give me a show. For 20 years, I'd been pitching like TV shows, radio shows, all kinds of shows. And, you know, it's really hard to pitch a TV show. Like, it's really, you get in a room with a bunch of, I'm going to say it, not very bright people. Actually, I shouldn't say that. Some of them probably are very bright, but they're also scared. They're scared of taking risks that are going to get them fired. Everybody in the TV business, and look, I worked in the TV business. I worked at HBO for several years. And again, I've had experience pitching shows to every single network in the world. And they always said, we want to do something new. We want to be the first to do something new. We want to take risks. And then at the end of the day, nobody wants to do anything new and nobody wants to take any risks. And so a podcast, and ever since I was a kid, I love the idea of having an interview show, of being like a talk show host. I mean, I loved it. I remember, well, even like in the 90s when I wasn't a kid anymore and I was doing the website for a book called The Late Shift, which was a history of the late night talk shows, Letterman Show, The Tonight Show, all these shows. I just was fascinated with the idea of being a talk show host. But then I realized even those talk shows are just BS. It's the guest comes on for 3 minutes. They have a pre-planned stupid interview. Like, none of those interviews are ever interesting. And when they get interesting, usually the guest is upset that it got interesting. And it seems so stupid. So a podcast, I can create my own show and do it about whatever I want. And if people like it, I'll know because the show will do well and people will want more of it and they'll listen to it. And I'll describe a little more what I've learned from the podcast. I mean, now after having like over, I don't know, must be like 1,300 guests or more, hopefully I've learned. I don't know what my life would be like if I hadn't spoken to these 1,300 people, but I've read a lot of books by these guys. I've talked to a lot of interesting heroes of mine, really. Like, you get to call up anybody you want and have them on your show and ask them any questions you want. It's an amazing thing. And I got to choose myself to do it, not to overuse that phrase, but I did choose myself there. And gosh, it's been a long time, and I hope I keep doing it for another 10 years. And I've been fortunate, James, to have a great producer like Jay. What were you about to say, Jay?
I was about to ask you, like, what was your, I mean, obviously you always wanted the show, right? Always wanted the show, but what was the event or incident just prompted you, like, I'm just going to pick up a phone and just start recording people? Like, do you remember the exact time, like exact mindset, like you wanted to do it?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of people wanted me to do a financial newsletter for them. This is back again in 2013. And I didn't really want to do one for a lot of reasons. I liked writing about finance, but I was also writing more about things like the book Choose Yourself. Like, the book Choose Yourself had just come out. And finally, some people said, listen, why don't you just do a podcast? And if that goes well, maybe you'll decide to do a newsletter.
I'm sorry, I'm just curious. Have you heard of a podcast then? Because 2013, podcast was really, really new, right?
Very new.
Well, I didn't even know about podcasts.
Look, I think I was doing the very first podcast back in 1996. I for HBO, I did a web show where I would interview people
right
at 3 a.m. It was called 3 a.m. So every Wednesday night, I would go out in the streets of New York City at 3 a.m. and interview whoever I encountered. Because on a Saturday night, if you're out at 3 a.m, I get it. You went to a party or whatever. But if you're out at 3 a.m. on a Wednesday night, usually something not very good is going on. And it was great. I did that for 3 years and I interviewed 20 people every week, 50 weeks a year. So that's like about, so I interviewed about 3,000 people. Is that right? I don't know.
Holy shit.
Yeah. For that 3 a.m. show. And each week we'd pick the 4 best interviews. And it wasn't, you couldn't really stream audio back then. The bandwidth wasn't enough, but we would transcribe the interviews. And I had different designers each week design the website. And we occasionally would put up video, but again, it wasn't very easy. But I did that for a long time. I mean, 3 years interviewing people at 3 a.m. It was, and I'm not a night person. Like I go to sleep like, you know, 8 p.m., 9 p.m. latest and wake up really early. And I remember one time, this is like 1995. One time I was at my girlfriend's house and it was about 3 a.m. and she was angry at me and kicked me out of the house.
What do you do?
I don't even really know. She was an angry person. Like she was always really angry. And so we didn't really last long. But I remember she lived in the East Village and kicked me out. She starts yelling at me like, go. And I leave and it's like a Wednesday night and the streets were packed 3 a.m, Wednesday night. And I'm like, what are all these people doing out? Like, don't they have work the next day or school the next day? Like, who are all these people? So I got insanely curious, like, what are all these people doing outside at 3 a.m? It was...
Also, like, how did they dress? Because, like, I felt like there are certain type of people that go outside at, like, past 12 o'clock. They always dress crazy. I don't know if that ever occurred to you.
Yeah, I mean, look, again, I interviewed thousands of people during this period. And, right. I mean... I remember why they always had some weird, like, I remember one time I interviewed somebody who had like, I don't know what you call it. Like he wanted to dress as if like all his limbs were like prosthetics. Like he had a metal hand. He had a real hand, but he put like metal over one hand. So it would seem like a prosthetic hand. And another guy had like a pet rat and.
Actual pet rat?
Like on his shoulder, a pet rat.
What?
I remember there was one guy who I would always run into. Eventually, you start running into the same people at 3 a.m. There was this one guy right. who literally called himself 24-hour Kahati. And he would only be out at night. So he was more like 12-hour Kahati because he was only out at night. he kind of represented the philosophy that I sort of picked up doing this 3 a.m. show, which is that there's a flip side to life. Like we always think of life as wake up, have your coffee, go to work, come home, eat dinner, spend time with family, go to sleep, repeat. But this was a flip side of life where all these people, for better or for worse, had to kind of figure out how to live in another way. They didn't have the normal 9-to-5. Maybe they were runaway kids. Maybe they were prostitutes or pimps or drug dealers or drug addicts. Maybe they were mentally ill. I mean, I ran into all of these types of people. Maybe they were, you know, everybody had something, everybody had a story. Like I remember one time for one of these, I had an idea. I'm going to stand outside the Chelsea Hotel at 3 a.m. I lived at the Chelsea Hotel, but I'm going to stand outside the Chelsea Hotel and just interview everybody who was coming in. And, you know, there was like one kid, not kid, like maybe he was in his 20s. He like rides his bicycle up to the Chelsea Hotel, rides into the lobby. And I'm like, what are you doing here at 3 a.m? And he said, oh, I'm visiting my mom. Who visits their mom at 3 a.m. in a hotel? And
quote unquote mom,
yeah.
You know?
And another girl came in and she was like at three in the morning, she was a party planner, but she was dressed like a medieval knight, like with a sword and everything. And And then someone told me later, like one of the guys at the desk told me later that she was a prostitute and she had like the penthouse in the Chelsea Hotel. And she even said to me at the end, you should come by and visit me sometime. We'll hang out. And I never did, of course, but everywhere I went, there was always strange stories. And
do you think you can do that now? Like given what's going on with the world, like the crime rate and goes up and stuff like
that. Yeah, look, people are doing it on TikTok. Hey, how much money do you make? Let's see what hot girls do for a living.
But they do it in a normal time. They don't go out at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, you could still do it. I mean, the only thing now is I don't think it's as interesting. Like New York City has cleaned up. There's no, like I used to go to the meatpacking district because literally meat was packed there during the day. I don't even know what that means, meatpacking. But, and then at night, the real meaning of the meatpacking district was it was all these then referred to as transvestite prostitutes. Now, I don't know what you call them, non-binary prostitutes. I don't know what you would call them. but they had a hard life. Like a lot of those, you know, let's just call them women because they were dressed and looked like women and so on. And some of them were going through the surgery. And a lot of them were abused, you know, in jail from the age of like 10 on, you know, or juvenile detention. And they were raped and abused repeatedly as kids. So their sexual identity was really confused, you know, in the way particular to them. And so they couldn't really survive during the day. Like McDonald's is not going to hire them during the day. And they were trans prostitutes. That's the only thing they felt they could do. And the laws were pushing them more and more west in Manhattan. That's where the meatpacking district was. That was always a reliable spot for good 3 a.m. interviews. That and the East Village, where there were a lot of homeless kids, and you know, 42nd Street, which was always busy 24 hours a day. Like it's amazing how 42nd Times Square was still pretty seedy then. It was cleaning up. Disney had bought basically every building on 42nd Street. Now they're all Broadway theaters, but at the time it was still a little seedy, and you know, but it was constantly busy. There was always so much noise in Times Square at 3 a.m, you couldn't even hear yourself talk. Very busy. And I remember one time I went to, there was a bus stop in Queens. And this bus stop, if you got on the bus only had one destination, which was Rikers Island, a jail. And the law was that if you could bail someone could be bailed out of jail 24 hours a day. So if someone was being bailed out at 3 a.m, the bus would take the parents or friends or whatever with the bail money, and then they would take the, you know, the prisoner home as well on the same bus. And it always ran at 3 a.m. And at the bus stop, there was all the prostitutes, pimps, and drug dealers because their customers were coming back from jail. So they would meet their customers at the bus stop. And I don't know, just I had story after story.
Wait, so is that where you actually like honed your interview skill? Yeah, because when you talk to those people at 3 a.m. in the morning, there's no topic. You literally just walk up to the person and you just start talking to the person.
Yeah, so there was a couple challenges in doing that. One is, first off, I'm a very shy person normally, and you have to just walk up to somebody and start talking to them. And then you have to convince them to tell you what they're doing. So like, a lot of times people were up to no good. Like, and I was taking their photo, I was taking videos, I was, you know, taking their name if they chose to give it to me. And so people were like, you know, cheating on their spouses, visiting prostitutes, visiting drug dealers. And again, most of the activity, at least then, was not, you know, all that on the up and up. And so then I had to kind of like, let's say a couple's arguing and they're arguing at 3 a.m. and just some random weird-looking guy comes up to them and say, hey, you guys, what are you arguing about? Like, they're not going to just stop arguing and say, well, you know, I think my boyfriend is cheating on me. They're not going to just stop. Like, sometimes people get angry at me and start yelling at me and trying to hit me. And I remember one time, though, I did get a couple that was arguing, and she found some girl's phone number in his pocket, and he was a restaurant owner. So of course he was like cheating on her, and they were like arguing there. And you always wonder like what happened. You know, one time, I don't know if I ever told you this story. One time So we would end the day. I would go with a production assistant and a photographer and, you know, a couple people. And we always end the day at the Empire Diner, which was on 11th Avenue and around 22nd Street. The waitress would always tell me if anything was going on in the diner. And she said, oh, there's some party going on back there. So I go up to these two tables where everybody seemed like they knew each other. And I said, oh, what's going on? And this guy says in his British accent, oh, me and my girlfriend are celebrating that we just got engaged. And she and all her friends are nodding and they're all laughing and smiling. And I said, well, I don't believe it. You guys should kiss, prove it. And so he reached over and kissed her and they started making out. And his friends are like, dude, what are you doing? And it turns out he was engaged, but to a girl back in London, and they had never spoke before, this guy and this girl. And then what happened was, because of that moment, I found this out later, because of that moment, he left his girlfriend, his fiance, and moved in with this girl he had just kissed.
So basically, James, you have ruined someone's marriage.
Yeah.
And well, then you started a new marriage.
That marriage would have been ruined anyway.
So you practically just helped that dude.
And well, yeah. And I, the way I found out was, so I was in Aspen for the HBO, the Aspen Comedy Festival, which HBO sponsored. This was like 6 months later. And I just randomly ran into some guy who was like, hey, you're that guy who interviewed us. I was at that table. And then he told me the story of what happened, that this whole thing happened, that this couple moved in together and then they broke up. And, you know, it was all very exciting. But also I should add, at the Aspen Comedy Festival, my job, I didn't just go for fun. My job there was to interview people, like to interview comedians.
Wait, you were a journalist in HBO, right? You were just programmer.
No, I'm not an ex in anything. And
yeah, but how do you get the part then, the job then?
I chose myself to do it. Like, and you could say, just, well, how do you do that? Don't you have a boss at HBO? Yeah, but at the time I suggested, this was 1995, I suggested HBO do HBO.com. And so, you know, and as part of the deal there, I did the website. Nobody else knew how to make a website. So I did the website and I created, I asked the CEO, Jeff Bukas, hey, just like you do original TV programming, like, you know, all the original HBO shows we know and love, how you do original web programming. And he basically was like, I don't care. Just do it. It's your generation. And so I would always pitch to every department in HBO. And I did this on my own. Hey, why not do a website around the comedy festival? Why not do this website called 3AM? And so I basically, it was like I was running my own little TV network on the web. And
right. So
at the HBO comedy, at this Aspen Comedy Festival, I interviewed Rodney Dangerfield, George Carlin, like all these comedians that are like, you know, super famous. And at the time they were famous also. It was a real big honor to interview them. But I had already done a lot of interviewing, you know, pretty early on. And actually, at the age of 12, I did my first paid my first paid piece of interviewing and writing for the South Brunswick Central Post. I interviewed a bunch of politicians, like the Speaker of the House, various senators and congressmen. I was really into politics, so I interviewed all these people. But that's another story. But anyway, I really think this HBO thing, 3 a.m., was like the first podcast. It was like a podcast about what people are up to at 3 in the morning in New York City. Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests and having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a three-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
One in eight. That's how many people have worked at a McDonald's. Who'll serve millions the best Big Mac and best birthday party they've ever had. Who haven't just seen kids graduate from a Happy Meal, but have gotten help graduating themselves. Because they know the skills learned here.
Bienvenidos. Welcome to English Under the Arches.
Can help you grow from here or keep growing here.
Hi, welcome to
One in eight, start at McDonald's. And where you start stays with you.
Fast forward to 2013. What triggered you to like, hey, I'm just going to sit down and talk to this person?
First, what triggered me was, and what triggers a lot of things that happen to people, is frustration. And it's an interesting thing because let's say you have a mildly bad job. Like, you don't really like what you do, but you kind of like your coworkers, you kind of like your boss. I'll stay here another year. So if you're of a mildly bad marriage, you're like, I don't want to be single. I could deal with this, you know, until the kids grow up or whatever. So you put up with it for another year, another 2 years, and so on. So mildly bad and mildly frustrated are not enough to provoke change. Things have to be really bad to make you change. Like if you get fired, for instance, you'll change your jobs, obviously, or really hate your boss. Like, your boss yells at you every day. You'll change your job. But mildly bad situations, you should change, but it doesn't feel strong enough to make a decision just yet. You could put up with it a little while longer, even though you should make the change in most cases. So, you know, I was always going on, you know, in the OOs, I was writing a lot about finance, and I was going on CNBC every week to talk stocks. CNBC wanted me to do a show. Fox Business wanted me to do a show. And I didn't really enjoy it. Like, I didn't really like, you know, I would always feel like I'd have to take a shower afterwards. I'd go on CNBC and they'd say, you know, talk about your five favorite stocks and or talk about the economy. And I just didn't like, or argue with this guy about gold or whatever. And I just didn't. And you go on for 3 minutes. You don't really feel like you say anything substantial or interesting. And the anchors are kind of clueless as to what's going on. They're just being, you know, handsome
pretty,
or beautiful.
Yeah.
And, I would prepare for hours for a three-minute segment, and then I'd have to drive out to the studio. I'd have to drive back. So the whole process for a three-minute appearance would take like 6 hours. But it was only mildly bad because I also liked being on TV. It was kind of exciting. And then I remember in 2009, there was a period where CNBC just, and Fox Business too, just stopped having me on. And the reason is because that was, you know, during the financial crisis, late 2008, early 2009. And I was very optimistic. I was saying, this too shall pass. And now's the time when things are at their lows. Now's the time to buy stocks. I refused to be pessimistic. And they were like, you got to be a little pessimistic to look at the world out there. And I'm like, yeah, this is the time to be optimistic. Don't be optimistic when things are at a high. Be optimistic when there's opportunity. And so there was a period where they just stopped booking me for things. And I was a regular. Like, I was an official contributor. I was on it every week. But they just stopped booking me for a while. And I got scared. I thought, the key to my credibility as a, you know, finance specialist or whatever was getting on CNBC and all these business shows. And I thought I would lose that credibility and like people would recognize me in the street. And I thought, oh, this is great. But I realized I was letting my own happiness be dictated by CNBC and or other financial institutions like that, you know, media, financial media companies. And I just hated that feeling. And that's why I stopped going on CNBC as much. I still continued for a few more years, but not as much. And I just started writing my own stuff about my own life. And when I wanted a show or when I wanted a talk show, rather than pitch some TV company, hey, I could do your late, late, late show or whatever, I said, well, why do I need to do that when I could just do a podcast? And, you know, podcasting, it was not everybody was familiar with them, but it was starting to get out there. I mean, guys like Joe Rogan had a podcast and Mark Maron, and there were a couple others.
Were they before you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Joe Rogan was around since 2009 doing a podcast, I think. And Mark Maron also around that.
Did Tim Ferriss come after you or before you?
So Tim Ferriss was like my second or third guest on my podcast.
Right.
And shortly after that, a few weeks after that, he calls me and says, hey, can I talk to you for a few minutes about podcasting? And I said, sure. And so he asked me, and this is the Tim Ferriss style and method, which I really learned from observing him do his podcast. But he asked me like 100 questions about podcasting, like everything you could possibly ask about podcasting. And then a few weeks after that, he started a podcast and it was great. And that's how he launched his podcast. He was about 6 months after me, I think. I remember he must have called not just me, but other podcasters. But again, I don't know, actually. As far as I know, he just called me, but I'm assuming he called others. But he asked me a ton of questions, and I really appreciate how he interviewed people he thought were doing a good podcast. And that's, you know, look, his show is the Tim Ferriss Show, just like I'm the James Altucher Show, and he has an interview format, and he does a really good job. I would say what he does even better is, you know, he's really good with the podcast notes and, you know, putting summaries and sending out emails about each podcast. I used to do that more. Like when I started, I did that, but he really kept it up consistently. And
right. Yeah. Because a lot of hard work, because you have to, it's like a full-time job with those.
Yeah. I mean, Tim's main thing is his podcast, but he doesn't do as many as I do. So he's able to do that. I have at least three guests, or, you know, I do three episodes a week. So, and he does like one every week or so. And I don't know if he's as regular, but he was in the beginning, and he's got a great show. And, you know, I would say the main guys who were sort of had similar shows to me back then were like Jordan Harbinger, Lewis Howes. That's how I met a lot of those guys.
Gotcha.
Because we were all kind of growing up together in podcasts.
So you have done 10 years now, right? Almost 10 years.
Yeah. So you figure three episodes a week on average.
Right.
Because there were some years where I did two episodes a week, and some years I did four episodes a week. I remember, and you know, I've had a good bunch of podcast producers, like Ryan Holiday's been, you're in the job right now that Ryan Holiday used to fill. Like Ryan Holiday used to be the producer right. of the podcast when I first started. I remember Ryan, when I wanted to do four episodes a week, Ryan was like, you know, that's too many people. They'd have to devote then like 8 hours a week to listening to you. But my view on that at the time, I thought he was right. And for what he was saying, he was correct, but people pick and choose what episodes they listen to. So I want to give them a wide variety of choices. They don't have to listen to every one. I think people thought then you had to listen to every episode of your favorite podcast, but nobody does that really.
Right.
So I've learned a lot throughout the whole process, and I definitely got better as an interviewer. Like I look back at some of my old episodes and I can't even handle listening to them.
I remember even the Peter Thiel episodes, you were just listening in the bathroom. You're just not listening, recording in the bathroom. It's so echoey because you're just recording it on your phone or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, all the software was different. Sometimes I would just call people on the phone and hit record. And then I would be like driving in a car and
right.
record an episode.
But how has your interview style changed over the past 10 years? I assume it's very different from where you first started.
Yeah. I think I'm a lot less scared. I mean, I'm always a little intimidated by the people I interview. Like, again, a lot of these people I interview are, you know, people I've either admired or they've been heroes to me, or I'm just super curious about some aspect of their lives or one of their books that they've written. And I mean, I don't have someone on unless I'm like super curious about what they're up to and how they are, who they are. And so I was often very nervous, and that would affect my interviewing. And
right. There's one person that hung up on you, right? I remember.
Biz Markie hung up on me. I feel like I've talked about this recently on the podcast, but
no, a while ago.
Yeah, Biz Markie hung up on me when I asked him, you know, how does it feel to have just one hit? And I didn't mean it to be in a bad way. Like, his hit is a huge hit. And he said, no, I've done more things. And I said, yeah, but if you go to China and ask people to like hum a song by Biz Markie, they're all gonna hum the same song. Now I'm forgetting what the song was.
I don't even know who he is. I probably know the song, but I just don't know who he is. But like, would you?
Yeah, oh, just a friend. Like, if you just put in Biz Markie, it even comes up. Biz Markie, just a friend. He was a funny guy, but yeah, he didn't really like that question, so he hung up. He's like, oh no, man.
But from that point on, were you afraid to offend anyone after that?
No, I never really tried to offend anyone, because I'm all about finding people I'm curious about and I look up to it. I'm asking them sincere questions, and I want them, you know, there's a couple of things when you do, for me, when I do a podcast, A, I want to be inspired by my guest because they might be a hero of mine. And B, I want to do a good job. I want them to think I'm smart and that I did a good job interviewing. And I know this sounds kind of like childish, but it's true. And C, I kind of want them to like me and be my friend for every guest.
Right.
And again, these are like kind of childish goals, but you know, I have become friends with some of these people who have been my heroes, which is
who was the guest that you become friend after?
Oh,
I mean, you know AJ way beforehand, right?
And AJ, yeah, I mean, a lot of people I knew anyway, but you know, some people I became friends with. You know, one big example, like when I was a kid, like my hero in chess was Garry Kasparov. And then we ended up being friends after he came on the podcast a few times. And, you know, I've had a couple of people like that. And I really like all the people who have come on as guests, you know, or let's say 95% of them.
Right. So, okay. So now we have the James Altucher Show, we have like five different series, sub-series in there now, right? Because we have Side Hustle Friday, we have Makes You a Millionaire, Wall Street Insane, My Favorite Things, and James Mentor People and more. Which one is your favorite of the sub-series?
You know, I just like experimenting with format. And I think, listen, first off, everybody should do a podcast because it's a moment where you really choose yourself. You know how many people listen to a TV show on CNBC, for instance? Fewer people than listen to this podcast. So, you know, most cable TV, nobody listens to. So to have a show where someone's actually listening to you is such a pleasure, and to be able to offer something of value that could potentially help other people, which is always my goal, is I forgot to mention, my biggest goal with guests is to hopefully the guests inspire others, the listeners.
Okay. I always have this question. It's because I want to start a podcast, but I don't know why I want to start. How do you find a niche and your passions?
I
love a lot of different things, but I don't know if I'm passionate into one. And also,
well, that was my point, is that A, starting a podcast, you could call up anyone you want and ask them to come on your podcast. Some will say yes, many will say no, no matter how big you are, because maybe they're busy or whatever. But so that's always a pleasure. The other thing is, don't get stuck in one niche. You're gonna run out of material. Like, sometimes I don't feel like interviewing anyone. Like this episode, we're not interviewing any. You're interviewing me, and you know, sometimes I want to play around with formats to see maybe this. You know, so I did Ask Altucher. I did Side Hustle Fridays, where we talked about side hustles. I did, you know, James Will Make You a Millionaire. James Will Mentor You. We did Good or Bad with AJ. I did Question of the Day with Steve Demner. So, you know, that was a separate podcast, but you always want to experiment with format, and maybe you come across something that's new and interesting and you feel excited about. And you always got to keep it fresh. Every part of your life, you always have to keep, you know, change is the only thing that doesn't change. So there's always change in life. And so you have to embrace that and look for the change, not run from the change. And so having experimenting with different formats is a must. So if someone is just doing a podcast, like if you're doing a podcast that's very niche, it's only going to have a limited time span. So there was a great podcast. I don't know if it's still running. I don't think it is. I haven't heard of it lately, but podcast was called Denzel Washington is the greatest actor ever, period. And I thought that was such a great title for a podcast because it's kind of funny and it's, you know what you're getting. It's just about Denzel. Every episode they analyze another Denzel Washington movie. And that's a great idea. But it's going to have a limited run because there's only so many Denzel Washington movies. Right. And, you know, I want it to be broader than that. And so some people thought I was going to do just a podcast about money, which would be so boring to me. And so, like, I think it was on my second or third episode, I had on Wayne Dyer, who was this big spiritual writer. And then I had on Tucker Max, who's, you know, a writer of I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell and Assholes Finish First. You know, these are major bestsellers. Definitely, they weren't podcasts about money. So I think people got the idea right away that, oh, this is going to be something different. And so I think now when people start a podcast, they think they have to niche. And look, if you do niche down, that will find an audience because you'll get people who are really obsessed with that niche. And I like John Lee Dumas's advice. So John Lee Dumas has a podcast called Entrepreneurs on Fire. It's a great podcast. He does 5 episodes a week and it's about different types of entrepreneurs. But he suggests to people in general, niche down twice. So you're going to do a podcast about careers, niche down again. Okay, you're going to do a podcast about lawyers, niche down again. Third niche down. Oh, I'm going to do a podcast about divorce lawyers. Okay, that's a triple niche down, and that would probably be an interesting podcast. But I can never do that. I like to be about general peak performance and other fascinating stories. So mostly it's about peak performance, but sometimes when I do these mini-series, it's about other things. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Kent State, their name does something for people. When people hear that you're a Kent State grad, they're like, oh yeah, I have a lot of nurses like that. And they're good nurses. They want to hire you because you're from Kent State in their nursing program. They teach the art of nursing. They teach the therapeutic communication. They teach how to really care for the person and not just knowledge. Even when it's hard in classes, even when this is a new adjustment, the school itself has the people and the support that you need to be the best nurse that you can be.
Begin at Kent State University.
Okay, so after these 10 years, after all these 10 years, what is the biggest takeaway from the podcast for you? For me, it's a lot because the first time I met you and worked on a show was Jesse Itzler. That's my first time ever dealt with podcasts, my first time ever record podcasts, my first time ever heard about podcasts. And then I fall in love right away because I learned so much from Jesse Itzler, from AJ Jacobs. And, you know, eventually I went on to become the full-time engineer.
Yeah, and then now producer. Yeah, so Jesse Itzler, let's just take that case right there. So this was like almost exactly 7 years ago. This was like in March of 2016. And Jesse Itzler had just written a book about training with SEAL. I forgot the name of the book, Living with a SEAL, 31 Days Training.
Right.
And he had lived with David Goggins for 31 days and he wrote a book about the experience and it was really intense. But Jesse Itzler is a great example where the guy's larger than life. He's like super charismatic. As Sarah Blakely told me about Jesse, because Sarah, his wife, and a billionaire, she's the founder of Spanx. She came on the podcast also and told me that, you know, Jesse thought very highly of me. And so she came on the podcast because she, if he says something, then she always listens. He's got a very distinct personality. But he's gone through his whole set of failures and difficulties. And what you learn when you talk to these 1,300 people, you know, and these are the best performers in their industries in the world, like everybody ranging from Richard Branson to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was, you know, the highest scoring basketball player ever until I think LeBron James broke his record a few weeks ago. But life is hard. Life is really, really hard for people, and people get frustrated and they get upset. And the harder you try to be something interesting and something compelling and to do something interesting, the harder it is and the more painful and frustrating it is. And again, like I said earlier, it's only like with real pain that you feel like you need to change. And so all these people had experienced really painful things, everybody. And so they felt like they needed change. And it was the change that they created that led to them learning. Nobody becomes a success just by luck, or very few people. There's, on top of that, there's a huge amount of work. And then there's a huge amount of meta work. So what do I mean by that? Like, well, there's the work of building a podcast, for instance, and that's hard work. But then there's the work of the psychology of trying to do something great, because you're going to fail a lot. And what if 1 month we don't have as many viewers as the month before? You have to deal with the psychology there. What if guests refuse you and then you see them on other podcasts? It's a little painful, and you have to deal with all the psychology of, you know, like you said, how do you get better at interviewing? A lot of people just don't get better at interviewing, and you have to start to understand what you're good at and what you're bad at, and then start to understand how can you improve the things you're bad at, because it's not so easy. You know, people think you just have to study something and you get better at it. That's not true at all. Right. You have to, your brain has been driving down one highway, you know, all your life, and you have to figure out how to take a new route. It's not that easy. Your maybe your car will break down if you try to go on dirt roads instead of the highway. And it's very hard to change, even though it's necessary to achieve greatness. Not that greatness is always the goal. Sometimes the only goal is showing up for that change, and that's success. And always evolving and going on to the next thing. Like, look, you were an audio engineer when I met you. For it was, this was your first podcast that you even listen to. And now you're producing a pod. You speak now. You're like a major speaker at podcast conferences. I mean, and you consult about to people on how to set up their podcast. And you just shot a writing course with me. Like you did all the shooting, directing, producing, and it's going to launch soon on Udemy. Like that's a whole new, you know, avenue for or an outlet for us. So learning from these 1300 guests that every one of them, they kind of not only had their story, but they had their meta story. That to me was very interesting, that you can't just, if you want to be good at tennis, you can't just learn how to serve. You have to learn how to deal with showing up at 5 a.m. for, you know, intense workouts every day. You have to learn to deal with loss. You have to learn to deal with the business side of being a professional tennis player. If you can't succeed as a professional tennis player, you have to decide how you're going to transform your advantages, the things that you learn in tennis, into some other career that you're just as successful at, and on and on. These are the meta skills, and they're almost more important than the basic skills.
So was there any down moment for you in podcasting?
Yeah, almost every moment.
Wait, really?
Yeah, it's like...
What is the most down moment for you? Because I produced you for so long. Obviously, you know, every time you show up for the interview, you perform. You know, because podcasting is a performance. It's hard.
It is. It's totally a performance.
Yeah, so like I can't really see your downs.
I think it's hard when... I think also constantly finding new ways to keep the podcast and show exciting is always difficult. Like that's frustrating because I want it to be good. So I'm always thinking, how could it be different and better? And how can I improve myself? And, you know, and I study other interviewers. And there's also sometimes, Jay, like you'll book me 5 different podcasts in a week and everybody's written 2 books and I've got to read 10 books in a week. So
Sorry.
All I'm doing is reading. And I'm like from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m, I'm like reading books. And sometimes I'm
happy when I book someone on the show. I'm like, yeah, I did my job. You know, I'm like, yeah, I'm proud. But then you have to do all the hard work.
Yeah, no, but you have to do the hard work too. You have to deal with like, if I'm at the last minute, if I'm not ready, I'm not going to do an episode, which I think is going to be subpar. So I always have to ask you to reschedule sometimes. And I know that must be hard, like the third time you're rescheduling someone, or if I have suddenly something I have to do at the time and it happens to be somebody that you had already rescheduled, it's always, yeah. I'm sure that's painful too.
Yeah, just the other day we say no to Obama, you know?
I know, like when I keep pushing Obama off until he gets finally, he's like mad at me, and then I feel really bad. He's former president of the United States, so.
But yeah, I mean, it's hard work to perform in front of the podcasting. Like sometimes when I try to, you know, sometimes when we do like 2-person podcast, just you and me, like I had to keep up with you. It's hard, like it's really hard. Like I never done this before. Not a lot. So like I can felt like the pain halfway through the interview. I'm like, oh shit, what if I run out of thing to ask, you know?
I always worry about that too. And sometimes, because I'm a little bit nervous, sometimes I'm asking a question and like midway through the question, I'll forget what question I'm asking. And that's sometimes hard because you're like, you're trying to juggle like 1,000 things in your head. Like not only all the things about this person's story, but you have to also remember, what did they just say 2 minutes ago that you remind yourself you wanted to follow up on, but first you let them finish, but then another question pops up in your head. Like in order to be good at podcasting or really to be good at anything, you have to be insanely curious. And then you have to, sometimes you're not feeling curious that day. So you have to kind of, you know, motivate yourself to feel insanely curious and then keep track of all the things you're curious about. I try to write a few notes before the podcast, but I also like to let things go where they go instead of, you know, a formal outline.
Right.
So it's complicated. It is a show. It is a kind of improvised performance for the hour or so that I'm doing an episode with somebody.
You know what really impressed me the most is that like every time a guest says something, I never see you write anything down, and then you can ask them the questions after.
Yeah, because it's sort of like you get into this hyper-focused state,
yeah,
where they're the guest is the only person in existence and everything they're saying is like drops of diamonds and you have to kind of gather all the diamonds and you know, spend them wisely. And you just really focus on what they're saying and who they are and what you're curious about. And, you know, I always remember these guests are on the podcast for a reason. Like how many, for every one guest, how many people do you think pitch us? We get pitched all the time.
All the time. Like five. I would say maybe like 10. And also like...
Yeah, I would say it's about... I would say it's about a 10 to 1 ratio, yeah, give or take.
And also like sometimes when people pitch to me, they will say like, hey, I really love your podcast. And then they just write podcast name.
Yeah, no, they... those are all almost always rejections. I feel bad for the people who hire those publicists.
Right.
But, you know, someone's on the podcast because I'm already really interested in them. Like I won't settle for less than that. But consequently, I'm constantly getting frustrated because let's say I really did want the president of the United States on, I'm probably not going to get him. And, you know, a lot of people say no to me, and I mean, not a huge amount, but enough. And, you know, that's, you know, that's something I have to push through as well.
Right. So what's the plan for the next 10 years?
I think the key is to keep innovating on the format. Again, I always love interviewing people. Now, one thing we've heard over and over from guests, particularly recently, is the importance of being social. But now it's like the main people I speak to during the week are you, my wife, and my podcast guests. And so part of the reason for doing the podcast is just to be social with these new people that I really admire. And, you know, that's a big thing for me. But so I want to continue doing interviews, obviously. Right. And I think there's a lot more to learn from. So everybody's got something to teach. The other day I was reading something that about a topic that interested me. And I see a friend of mine quoted. Apparently he's the expert in this. So we've never had him on the podcast. I plan on calling this guy and seeing if he'll come on the podcast. Scott Barry Kaufman, if you're out there listening to this, come on my podcast. I've been on your podcast.
No,
Scott.
He'd been on our show before. During the pandemic.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He was.
During the pandemic.
And I was on his. And then when he was in, during the pandemic, yeah, he came on. When he came out with the book, what was that book?
I can't remember the book. That was like.
I forget the names of all the books.
Yeah, but he was great because I remember that was the first time we used Squadcast and because, you know, it was so new because the remote recording industry was so new.
I think his book was called Transcendent.
Yeah.
Transcend, the new science of self-actualization.
Yeah.
But he's really into something now called obsessive interest versus harmonious interest.
Right.
As a way of mastering a topic. It's better to have harmonious interest as opposed to obsessive interest.
Gotcha.
And so I want to talk to him more about that because for anybody who wants to get better at anything, these are useful distinctions. And when I've tried describing it to others, they're always very fascinated. So I'm looking forward to if Scott will come on again, I'm looking forward to having him on.
Right. Yeah. We just have him on. I have one thing to pitch you.
Yeah.
You should open a bookstore and then at the back of the bookstore is a podcast studio. So anytime they do a podcast, you know, like how people have new book come out, they have to promote their book. They can promote the book in
the
bookstore.
Yeah, they have to come and do a book signing at the store
and then
do a book reading.
Podcast after.
You know, it was nice when I had the Stand Up Comedy Club is that, you know, we could always use the comedy room where there's room for an audience.
Right, yeah.
To have podcasts. I mean, we had David Goggins on in the front of the audience.
We had John C. McGinley. And then we have Michio Kaku in front of the crowd. And then we have
William Shatner.
William Shatner. We have Mike Love in front of the crowd. Remember Mike Love?
Yeah, Mike Love. Well, he had the whole crowd sing. So Mike Love was one of the main singers or the lead singer for the Beach Boys.
Yeah.
And so we had everybody singing Kokomo by the end.
Yeah. So that was fun. You should just open a bookstore here. A small one. Don't have the big one. A small one, right? Because you know what? Who go to bookstore buy books anymore? No, right?
I have to open up a bookstore in my house then because I never leave my house.
And then they just come do book reading and then do a podcast during the book reading. And then that's a podcast. And then we meet new people. We meet new, and then more people want to come on the show. Maybe Barack Obama will come on the show.
And, you know, I always want to keep innovating, though. I want to find, you know, new ideas, maybe I go out and experience something and record it while I'm experiencing it. Kind of like, I really admire the formats in a lot of YouTube channels now. And I think, you know, I'm looking to those people as potential inspirations of how their formats, you know, like a little bit more commentary. Like I like Moist Critical, how he does this kind of very dry but like funny commentary on news events and memes and stuff like that. So there's a lot of interesting stuff out there. And look, that's the competition is YouTube. I understand people listen to podcasts when they can't watch videos because they listen on the commute to work, they listen in the gym, and so on. But I mean, we were one of the few podcasts, according to our hosts, the people who host our podcast, we're one of the few podcasts that gained volume during the pandemic because people were no longer commuting.
Right.
And so they weren't listening to podcasts as much. But, you know, we were doing a lot of stuff about the pandemic, so people were listening to us.
Yeah.
But having that ability, though, to change formats and ideas, you know, is critical.
Yeah. Speaking of changing format and constantly innovating the podcast, so part of the whole reason why we do this episode, and I pitched James doing this episode, is we want to see what our listener habit is like what's your, so we try to do like a listener survey. So there are like 5 questions in this Google form. One of it is like, how and where do you find a show? And if you were to recommend a show to your friend, how would you pitch it? Would you make the show longer or shorter, and why? And then one of it is, this I have to ask you as well, James. So if the show dies tomorrow, if I die tomorrow and no other people can take over my role, and the show just died tomorrow, what would you miss most about the show?
I would really miss the fascinating interactions I have with people. Like, I really love meeting new, interesting, exciting people. I've always loved that all my life, and people I'm curious about and people who impress me and inspire me. And I want to kind of take what inspires me and interview them, and hopefully it inspires all the listeners. I think I would really miss kind of the social aspect of, I mean, like I said, it wasn't exaggerating. You and the podcast guests are like the only people I talk to during the week. So, or the main people I talk to during the week. So, you know, I would miss that a lot. And I would miss also, to be honest, I would miss, you know, I was just in a hotel the other day and somebody comes up to me out of nowhere and says, oh, I love your podcast. And it's a little bit of ego, but I would miss that part too. I really, if you see me anywhere, please come up to me and tell me you listen to the podcast. You don't even have to tell me you like the podcast. Just tell me you listen to the podcast and I'll be happy.
Right. Or you can say like, I thought you were Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah. Sometimes people say, oh, I loved Blink. I love The Tipping Point.
Right.
So Jay, what you said, there's a survey. What's the URL right. for the survey?
So the URL for the survey is jamesaltucher.com/listeners with the S. jamesaltucher.com/listeners. And
James Altucher, is it thejamesaltuchershow.com or James Altucher Show?
Just jamesaltuchershow.com/listener.
So jamesaltuchershow.com/listeners. Listeners.
And also, we are trying to bring back Ask Altucher again. So it will be the similar link. It's a Google form as well for you to ask us anything. 10 predicate, just James about anything. So the link for that is jamesaltuchershow.com/AskAltucher. So it's again, jamesaltuchershow.com/AskAltucher. But yeah, James, thank you so much for doing this episode. You know, this is my first time hosting an episode. It's pretty heavy. It's a heavy weight to carry.
Well, you do a good job of it, Jay. Maybe you could host more for me.
See, I really want to be a co-host of anything because I feel like co-host is the best thing to do because the host would do anything. And if I find something funny, I'll just make funny comments and that's it.
By the way, look, it could be the case that we end up doing more episodes, particularly we're in discussions with, despite what I said earlier about shows and radio shows and choosing myself, we have been approached by some radio companies about also doing this on radio. So that could be interesting.
Yeah.
Again, as long as I'm not begging for it, I'm happy. When they come to me is when you know things are right.
Yeah. People come to us for almost everything.
Yeah, which is good.
All right.
But Jay, thanks so much for suggesting we do this. It's going to be a fun year with the 10th year anniversary of this podcast, and we'll think of a lot of fun things to do. And we have a lot of great guests coming up and things that I've been inspired
by.
Yeah,
I think at the 10 years anniversary, we should do a live episode of all the guests that you like come on, play a chess with you and do a podcast at the same time. No matter like how good the chess is, they have to play at least one game.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. Thanks, James.
Thanks, Jay.
Kent State, their name does something for people. When people hear that you're a Kent State grad, they're like, oh yeah, I have a lot of nurses like that. And they're good nurses. They want to hire you because you're from Kent State in their nursing program. They teach the art of nursing. They teach the therapeutic communication. They teach how to really care for the person and not just knowledge. Even when it's hard in classes, even when this is a new adjustment, the school itself has the people and the support that you need to be the best nurse that you can be.
Begin at Kent State University.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.